we welcome back Ringo Lam to the directing chair, and he goes into the beating heart of the city, mixing Hong Kong, Taiwan, China, and the result is the chase for a girl, a bag of cash, and it's also one of Louis Koo's probably 10 to 15 movies in 2015. I'm not going to look it up, I just know I'm right, somehow. This is also, by the way, our closing episode of the director series on Ringo Lam, and we do that with our review of his 2015 movie Wild City. And welcome back, listeners, to the finale of the director series on Ringo Lam. I hope you enjoyed this examination. We sure have, even though it's not a 100%, it's not a 100% fresh filmography in terms of consistent ratings.
If you're talking kids in 1994, then yes, Ken.
Isn't that what the kids use today online anyway? Like that out about in life term, or slang, fresh, transferred to the internet, because we all obviously got rotten and fresh as the barometer of quality nowadays. So if you were to put Ringo's filmography on Rotten Tomatoes, I think it would reach a nice 70 to 80% across his filmography, you know, because the highs are really high and some of the lows are really low.
I agree, man. Yeah, definitely.
He's not a perfect director, but if you reach 80, some movies individually would be a 90.
Man, but you know, which directors do have 100% Rotten Tomato score? Who, Kenneth? Who?
Only one-time directors with a slam dunk movie.
Ooh,
you know what I mean?
I like what you did there.
But our man is 23 movies in so far. So, 22. It's always that. Happy Goes Free is still haunting me, so to say.
It's literally haunting us.
It might be, and I've no problem watching a Happy Ghost movie, but I'm still not sure he did.
Have we had any word on that? Didn't you put the call out last episode? Have we not had anybody messaging about that?
Well, at the time of recording, that episode has not been released, so we're just going to have to wait.
When did we speak about this?
An episode or two ago.
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. Look behind the scenes there.
I might just post poster, for heaven's sake, on the Facebook group, yes, and see if anyone can find Ringo Lam's name on the poster. If not, I think it's one of those unofficial, he might have been there to help out, to be an assistant director or direct a couple of scenes, and therefore someone knew about that and put him on the Hong Kong movie database entry, and that might be correct unofficially, but I'm still not sure about that. It's certainly not Happy Ghost Free, you know, the dark and gritty version or anything. It's still...
It should be. I'd really be into that, definitely.
I don't remember it being that, because that series was very, you know, it didn't have... It wasn't a shape-shifting Hong Kong comedy series, right? In terms of, the Happy Ghost experience tragedy and walks into a robbery and then, like, Kirk Wong violence comes at you or whatever. Raymond Wong kept it pretty family-friendly. Like, even
is there
in Happy
any
Ghost,
fights between ghosts or anything like that?
But I do remember in Happy Ghost 4, he was fighting alongside literally a cartoon, Raymond Wong. So they literally... became a cartoon, a Disney cartoon, a little Rod. Maybe it was made same year Roger Rabbit was made, so maybe they were trying to cash in, like, hey, live and cartoon.
Might have been first, you know, cutting edge. Maybe Zemeckis was inspired by Happy Goes 4. I'm just putting it out there. I don't want to start any conspiracy theories, but, you know.
And Happy Goes being inspired by Mary Poppins or whatever, so then the circle is complete.
The circle of life, complete.
I don't think I'm even correcting that. Was Mary Poppins live and cartoon, or was that another Disney movie?
No, you're probably thinking of Bedknobs and Broomsticks, aren't you?
Might be, yeah.
But there's a little bit, you know, trickery going on, but there's actual cartoon characters in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Derailed already, but we're going to get the show on the road.
How long did that take? What are we actually in here? What was that, 3 minutes? Something?
Well, I'm the guilty party, but we are here to conclude the Ringo Lam series, regardless, with his 2015 movie, Wild City. And we're going to give you the content of the episode really shortly. But first of all, this is the director's series on the Podcast on Fire Network. And this show covers the entire filmographies of select directors, or as many movies as we can find. I think across the selections, Nam Nai Choi, Kirk Wong, David Chang, and now Ringo. I think we got them all. Maybe one movie eluded us, but maybe that was the example of we got it after the series was concluded, so we squeezed in a bonus episode to conclude the filmographies. I think the gods of availability have been kind to us across this.
It's a beautiful age we're living in, man.
Well, yeah, even, you know, it helps to have been uselessly collecting, like, VCDs and Laserdiscs. And,
that definitely helps,
and
yeah.
And then, thankfully, some people are nice to share these elusive versions of movies on Laserdisc or whatever. So it is indeed a nice era where people are not keeping, you know, stuff to themselves or anything.
People are moving away from the big boss saw in the head scene very slowly,
fucking
bit by
so.
Bit. We're moving
I
away
can't
from
stand that sort of like when people come out, well, I've seen it and I have it. So what?
No one cares.
No one cares
no
anymore.
One
and
cares.
If it did exist, it would leak and we would see that second cut out of the big boss and nothing would change other than, oh yeah, it looked exactly like I thought it was going to look like.
It looks exactly like that picture that's flowing around, but, you know, kind of...
You know what I literally think it is? Because you know how that scene in The Big Boss plays out. That we literally, I think, we might see two shots, right? One where Bruce Lee flails the saw in the frame, and then we get a still shot with the saw in the head, so to say, already in the head.
I think it's been recreated on YouTube, that sounds...
I think you can, based on stills.
Yeah,
I can.
You're ringing bells. I think I might have seen something like that.
Because that movie was not technically accomplished in that regard, where they were going to do a complex makeup effect. So I don't think that footage is going to set the world on fire.
That was good, that was.
It's hard to avoid.
That might be the best joke of the evening so far. I think it might be the whole night, to be honest. It's all downhill from here.
Not
that
intended to be funny, but I'll take it. The director series, a back catalogue covering those directors I mentioned, they're available on podcastonfire.com along with all our other shows on Hong Kong Cinema New and Old in the flagship show Podcast on Fire. We also cover Korean cinema and Japanese cinema. We talk of adults-only movies and produce bonus episodes every now and again. The director series have had a couple of such bonus episodes as well. So check out the archive. It's a website-exclusive thing, so you can get more podcasts if you want to. If you've exhausted the iTunes and Stitcher Radio availability of our shows, then there is an archive of website-only bonus episodes. If you want to leave us a like and support us on social media, click any of the handy buttons at the top of our website. The first one leading to our Facebook presence. You got the link to our Twitter feed, the link to our iTunes and Stitcher Radio feeds as well. And please rate and subscribe and even leave a comment on iTunes. We would love to hear from you, whatever show you like. Just throw us a little small comment. iTunes will accept that as a review, so do let us know what your favorite Ringo Lam movie is in the review, so to say. But you can also do that on email or on the social media that I mentioned. Our email is at any rate podcastonfire@googlemail.com. Hey Tom, what is your favorite Ringo Lam movie, you think?
Oh man, you really put
is it
me
one
on
of
the
On Fires
here. Yeah, probably one of the
School?
On Fires, to be honest. Probably City, to be honest.
That's fair.
Yeah, to be honest, as I say, I mean, that's kind of got it all in terms of his style, and it's just kind of this, you know, amazing performances and amazing script and pretty much got everything.
Easily rewatchable versus School on Fire, that might not be as, it's a tougher watch, so maybe it's not as friendly as a rewatch, you know.
Yeah, it's not as kind of as relentlessly kind of bleak as School on Fire is. But I think School on Fire might be his best, might be his masterpiece. I think we said that on the show.
For me, it still remains Wild Search because I'm very weak for the tender side of his. That then is it's occupied. It shares the stage with the violent side, and I think all of those fit very well, regardless of how close he is recreating Witness, because I haven't rewatched that movie. It's still a quality movie for me, you know. But I heard from people that I talked to. I did the review of it with Phil G, and his memory was that it's not copying scenes exactly from Witness or anything. Like, the skeleton of Witness is sort of there.
Yeah, of course.
I know it's on iTunes and Netflix, but I still haven't picked up and watched Witness. But I think I should, because I think it's still a very acclaimed movie, the Harrison Ford movies. So,
yeah, it's probably one of Harrison Ford's best performances. Yeah, I think it hasn't been the time between seeing Wild Search and Witness together. The time between them has always been too long. So I think it's probably best to maybe watch them together and see kind of the comparisons for myself.
We'll see what happens. But those are our favorite Ringo Lam movies. But we also, we're on iTunes, Stitcher and all of that. Tom has a written review archive of a variety of Hong Kong movies. I don't think any Ringo Lam movies are in there, but it's still a quality archive of reviews. So check that out in the show post links, his vcinemashow.com review archive. And that's it for now. The rundown. We have a few sections as always, and you can find time codes in the show post for these. And what we got here for you is I sort of broke down an interview piece that appeared on the blog Kaiju Shakedown, and that link will be available. It's now author Grady Hendrix's blog. Grady Hendrix is the author of My Best Friend's Exorcism and Horror Stir. Which is sort of nice. He's always been this authority on Hong Kong and Asian cinema. He still is.
Yeah, man.
But he branched out into acclaimed writing. So there you are. In that piece was a nice interview with lots of details about Ringo coming back to directing. So and how the production took a toll on him, and what it's like making genre movies today. So I sort of summarized that piece and pulled the highlights from it, but we'll link to the full piece, of course. We'll follow all of that because it includes some making of tidbits about Wild City, and we'll follow that with a review of Wild City, and also because it's the last movie of his at the time of recording, we'll do the designated quick take review last, which will be of his 2016 movie Sky on Fire. So after quite a pause and absence from directing, he did two movies in 2 years, in 2015 and 2016, Wild City and Sky on Fire. But that's the last one at the time of recording, and I personally don't know of any announced projects yet, but I might be wrong. So if you know anything about a looming Ringo Lam movie, do let us know.
And that Kirk Wong film that we were talking about as well, last episode of that, someone let us know, please, if you have any information.
Yes, some directors just vanish completely, including Kirk, and which is sort of a shame, because we were looking forward to more from him after his Hollywood adventure and all of that. So
we need to get him on some milk cartons or something. Have you seen this filmmaker? Where are you, Kirk?
It's amazing to me, by the way, and all of this is okay, but when people talk of the big hit, for instance, which you and I like, and we're so amused by the fact that Kirk nailed the comedy and nailed the action beats, and it's a fun movie, but it's not a movie where the sort of where people think it's medium fun or anything. It's always like, oh my god, that's awesome, or what the F is this about?
Bit of a Marmite film. Love it or hate it. No in-betweens. Yeah, a little bit like that.
But I don't mind. I like having the love for it in my life.
You don't mind other people having an opinion, Ken? You truly are a god amongst men. Especially a god amongst men on the internet.
I know it's radical and stuff, but I kind of respect diverse opinion.
First, you flip up the show tonight. You do the front thing at the back and the back at the front. And now you're saying this. I just don't know who you are anymore. You changed. The celebrity status has gone to your head.
Now you're being like Jay is all the time. He does this to wind me up. Like, hey, web celebrity,
Jay's
Kenneth.
Jay's being serious, and I'm behind him. And you know, next you're going to be asking me to take the brown M&Ms out of the M&M jar. And no. Can't do it, Ken. I've got things to do. All right.
Is that what I would have on my rider? Like,
yes, that is the sole thing on your rider. Also, spike gel.
You gotta get that right, otherwise there will be no Sweethawk.
You need brush wax. You specifically requested that.
If I mention the brand now, maybe I can get a sponsor.
You should, man. You should. I use Frizzies with Moroccan oil. Shout out to Morocco. Really big fan of their couscous and oil. Shout out. So if you could get me, you know, if they're listening, either one of the makers of those two items, that would be fab.
Yes, it would all flow automatically. Tomorrow in your mailbox.
Couscous and oil together.
Exactly. Yes, out in the rain. Okay, okay. We are going to start this one off. So Wild City from 2015, the review of it and some background notes and plot from IMDb. Lewis Koo plays Kwok Tin Man, a cop turned bar owner who befriends a drunken woman. The character of Tong Yun, played by Tong Li Ya. He befriends her at closing hour and finds himself pursued by her former lover, which is a lawyer played by Michael Tse, and also the Taiwanese thugs he employs. I hope you noticed that the main thug in the Taiwanese gang was our old pal from Full Alert, Jack Cao.
I did not notice that, no.
How can you miss that face? Man. That badass face.
Oh, of course, yeah. Spoilers, yeah. Of course.
He's not even the entirety of the movie. That's what Tom is saying.
Yes, of course, Matt. Of course, yeah.
So that was a little bit. Ding! Look at that. Full Alert reunion. The chase turns deadly when the bar owner's deadbeat brother, the character of Kwok Siu Chung, played by Sean Yu, and a suitcase full of cash enter the picture. So as for the background, as I talked of, I summarized some tidbits from an interview piece posted on the blog of author Grady Hendrix, and his blog is Kaiju Shakedown. And we found on that blog, it's sort of an interview piece by, not Grady, but by screenwriter Hiroshi Fukasawa, who is also a documentary filmmaker. He directed a movie called Development Hell about the making of Bodyguards and Assassins, which I know Stu saw at a film festival many moons ago.
I didn't see that, but I heard about that, especially when I was writing a review for that. I did find out that there was a documentary. Very interesting.
But he interviewed or sat down to chat with Ringo mid-production of Wild City, where Ringo had a bit of a rough start during first day of shooting already, because he passed out and fell due to heat stroke. So there you are. But the veteran refused to stop working. We know he's 100% into his creativity, so he wouldn't let that delay the production or anything, and he completed the film, obviously. And he hints that one might consider, if you like, Wild City part of the City trilogy, along with City on Fire and Full Alert. It's very loose, obviously, as he sees these movies as Hong Kong set movies about lost people, including how they can get lost in the pursuit of wealth. And he says the characters are not full of failures or anything, but they have gotten lost in society. They might not feel like the winners they aim to be, and that theme has not changed very much since the 80s. It could be relevant even in the 90s, and obviously in today's society as well, according to Ringo. Today's society is, according to him, I kind of like this quote, today's society is just modern on the hardware side. But, you know, deep down, the sort of emotional and mental issues, if you will, that is still similar to the 80s. So those moving parts are the same. People are greedy and selfish. So that's the old Ringo cynicism coming through.
Well, technology, you know, is constantly changing, but humanity will always be stupid, right? Unless we get them computers like in our heads or whatever, like the Matrix or whatever. But I doubt it. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
I want to learn other languages really quick so I can pick up DVDs from Germany and France. That's the only reason.
You can watch films in your head as well and throw out all those terrible, outdated video formats that you collect.
Shut up.
Really bad, yeah.
The pretty colors will always remain the pretty colors. The pretty colors on the substantial covers.
Get with the times. Kids have got USBs nowadays. 13 TB USBs.
I bet USBs are outdated as well. I think both you and I are so way behind the flow. So
way behind. I'm not edgy enough for this modern society.
But Ringo also talks of coming back to helm his first feature since doing the section in Triangle. He only did a third of that, along with Choi Hak and Johnny Toe. But Ringo said it was time. His son had graduated from college, and he jokingly said in the piece that his wife was probably tired of him being home all the time. So, but he also reflects quite maturely that this was his and is his final stretch as a filmmaker. He's a man in his 60s, and he wants to continue to express himself, to unburden himself of thoughts and themes, but he also is keen on learning more of himself and mirror his movies onto himself as well. In his own words, I don't make films for money anymore. So he's trying to grow as a character through creativity rather than just pouring out pure anger and doing that for the money or whatever. So it's not as soul destructive as in the 80s and 90s when he was at his most angry, I suppose. We talked of him being very open in the press about certain things he didn't like. He talked about the Tiananmen Square massacre, that people should be quiet and forget about it because it's been a while. Essentially, he did that and that wasn't popular. It doesn't sound like the same Ringo anymore, this outspoken kid. He talked also about staying away from directing and what he observed during that time away from it. And he was kind of upset about the filming environment in the early 2000s in Hong Kong. His comedy Looking for Mr. Perfect flopped, and he got the sense the audiences just wanted one thing out of him, and he saw no point in adhering to making a Ringo Lam movie, you know, making another On Fire or whatever, which is very fair. He also sort of talked of this absence being done for personal reasons, and he pointedly said, I wanted to be the protagonist of my own life in my film, and I wanted to spend more time with my family. Because, you know, obviously all of that is a learning journey, you know, to spend that time with your loved ones, to travel and to also enjoy the silence and nature and observe what he can learn from his family, you know, to continue to build his character, while also at the same time working on researching what material in film is worthy of making and putting into a future film of his, whenever that will take place. So it sounds like he was always on, even though he wasn't getting to do or pursuing to do.
Definitely, that might be why he walked away from, and this is all speculation, I couldn't find any actual hard evidence, but he was supposed to direct Van Damme in Wake of Death.
Oh, was he really?
Which I think came out...
It was after In Hell,
2003, 2004, yeah. So, I mean, again, it kind of makes sense, to be honest, that possibly that he was just kind of done with it, really, and he kind of had a flop and kind of, you know, from then, obviously, he only directed a third in Triangle, which is a bit more of kind of an interesting project rather than making the kind of standard, you know, Ringo Lam films. They must be tiring to make, you know, and obviously he's a director that's so intense and kind of knows what he wants that it must be very difficult to just churn them out for Ringo.
Yeah, he takes it personally rather than, especially when he found his voice, I think. I can just imagine that his early comedies wasn't necessarily him, you know, sweating blood to get The Other Side of Gentleman made like I'm envisioning it.
The Vision Man.
Directed for hire, young, and all of that. And
it's our most, you know, most of them guest starred, right? You know, directing your dream projects, you know, initially.
He talks about making movies now versus even the beginning of the millennium, which then connects to the cooperation with the mainland to a degree. And he says the advantage nowadays is bigger budgets and with the investment from the mainland, but the negative is less bankable actors that audiences will buy tickets to go see. A bigger mainland market in the billions versus Hong, you know, that's the sort of size of it. It's a bigger mainland market in the billions versus the smaller Hong Kong market, and so few stars are available and there to place at the top of the marquee or poster for audiences to connect to. I mean, that's
it's
a sort
sad,
of sad isn't
it?
Truth.
Yeah, it's sad. It's like most of the Hong Kong guys also been doing it for years that you kind of know and love now, and then newer guys, it's just kind of mainland actors and actresses. It's sad, you know, in terms of young Hong Kong talent. It's like, who do we have, really?
They're lower in volume, that's for sure, and maybe I'm missing on a great upcoming group.
Definitely,
of
Definitely,
yeah.
No,
but,
not saying that as a kind of blanket, you know, kind of statement for sure. Either. As well, I don't keep up with kind of who's really coming out in terms of the for the reasons really that we're kind of speaking about now. To be honest,
I mean, Lewis is obviously bankable, and
yeah, but these are guys that have been doing it, you know, for years.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. And Sean, I mean, we'll get to it. Has been at it for quite a while, and he's gained notices over the years, including a year or two ago with Mad World. But yeah, he's not the big marquee star. I don't think he's ever reached that point, Sean Yu, throughout his now very long career. But it's a respectable career, nonetheless. Ringo also talks about shooting in Hong Kong has also become difficult because a lot of crew members and filmmakers have moved to mainland China, where the work is. And of course, the sad part is also that the decline of the amount of stunt persons in Hong Kong is a factor, because the emergence and the common use of computer-generated imagery is obviously still holds the industry in a firm grip. So,
cinema in general, isn't it really? Rather, not just, you know, Hong cinema.
Exactly, it's a very global thing. So there is no real action or real stunts anymore. And since Hong Kong or nor mainland can outgun Hollywood in the department of you know, action and CGI nowadays, the movies tend to suffer. Then he rightly looks back on the fact that the standout aspects of Hong Kong films with real, very well-conceived stunts is gone, and therefore the unique stamp of Hong Kong movies is as well, which is kind... It's not unfair. I mean, there are sparks. There's always going to be sparks. But and I'm not looking, Tom, for everything to be just like in 1987. But it certainly is a past era.
Yeah, there's got to be like an evolution in there. You know, with all cinema, there's got to be that kind of that moving forward and trying different things and, you know, going on. But I think it always helps to kind of maybe have a foot in the past when the country's output is so known for a certain type of cinema.
Because it's not impossible to do stunts and have a real sense to them, because other countries
look at the Raid
have.
Films, you know, they come out. If you're talking action films the past few years that have come out and have, you know, incorporated, you know, old school way of filmmaking and you know, stunts and performers performing in frame rather than, you know, CGI, it can be done.
I mean, it's that Hollywood resurgence on that note as well, because for some reason it's becoming more hip than anything. But obviously the John Wick movies changed the game a little bit in Hollywood in terms of shooting physical and coherent action and things like that. But
definitely, yeah, another yeah franchise that's doing you know, similar things,
which is sort of why I've been a little bit turned off by what followed in the wake of John Wick, including the fact that they're now crafting this big universe of John Wick movies. I'd rather just movies be one solid action movie sometimes, Tom. I don't need it to be a mythology.
No, I completely agree, man. The mythologies can be exhausting.
Exactly. So I haven't even pursued the second one. Not yet, anyway. So, but
yeah, two films is too much. Jesus. Sequels. There's two films in the franchise. I know, it's ridiculous, Ken.
It's exhausting. But Ringo also says, as we talked about in other episodes, that they were always planning stunts and action well in the 80s, despite selling the sense of realism and the feeling of genuine danger and not enhanced with computer graphics. It was still well planned. He also credits the Thai film industry for having surpassed both Hong Kong and Korean action films currently, as they mix Hollywood and Hong Kong style in a way better fashion. And I don't know if The Raid was out in 2015 when this talk was held, but
I think it was 14 the first one was, yeah,
so I'm sure he was aware of it, so it's not like he's excluding it willingly or anything. He also says Hong Kong can still excel at the genre of wuxia and martial arts, but since because there is a rich tapestry in history books, but that makes it interesting as a genre only for Hong Kong and China and not internationally, and that's the problem for the Hong Kong movie to reach out compared to how it reached out back in the day, and that's also sort of a fact. In mainland, they go for fantasy and wuxia to a degree, but not always, because, you know, Wolf Warrior 2 is a modern action movie that works better versus fantasy sometimes, you know. So on stepping onto a set again, he talked of that, you know, heat stroke aside, he felt good. And he went about his working ways in an intense manner. He pushed himself physically, mentally, and he was caring 100% like he always did. He felt to an extent like he never left because he was back in his element, which is a rather sweet thing. The heart and mind was in sync, and he talks about contemplating the meaning of optimism. He cut out movies from his daily habits to probably not be too influenced by external aspects. And he also says that movies come to me in my dreams anyway. So he's an idea man. You know, creativity can be bred from within to a degree. So as his friend and interviewer said, is this the emergence of Ringo Lam the optimist? Because he sort of thought like, yeah, you weren't like that all the time. You never talked about optimism, dude. So would that mean a new voice in films, a more kinder voice, if you will? And Ringo commented, well, the world runs its course like it always has and always does. But, you know, at least some of my central characters gets a chance to survive at the end. And I guess that's a difference. So it's not all doom and gloom, even though violence can still exist, I suppose. So.
Yes, The Other Side of Gentlemen Part 2 is coming out next year, and I really look forward to Ringo's new optimistic vision. Can't wait.
Great.
Bring the tan back. I want to see some of those jackets as well, man.
Whenever they're making a comeback on the catwalks in Paris, that's the time to make this movie, right?
Definitely. Tam needs to, like, gate crash one of the Milan catwalks, and it could be, like, a promo for the film. Mate. I've just done it right there.
Not ripping off Sacha Baron Cohen at all, right?
Not at all. No, that didn't even come into my mind. It came to me in a dream, but Ringo.
But the Hong Kong numbers for Wild City, if we return to that, according to Box Office Mojo, it peaked at number 4 in the weekend box office with a US dollar take of roughly 700,000. And it also ranked in the sort of 60 to 70 range in terms of the top 100 that year or whatever. So it didn't make a lot of money. In China, the total box office that year was about 20 million US dollars. So it was higher versus Hong Kong, but not a slam dunk commercially. So that's the sort of sour end to it all, but you never know how it goes. He was back and he cared, and that's admirable rather than going back to pay tuition. Right? So, like he probably made a life for himself and his family, and they got their wish to get him out of the house.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most guys just leave, walk the dog, you know. Ringo's missus gets him to make a film. Just please be out of the house for like 3, 4 months, 5 months, whatever you need. Make sure it's optimistic, Ringo, okay, as well. Don't see any more kids getting killed, okay? I've had enough.
So as for short opinions there for a Wild City, and let me go first here, there are moments here, and I emphasize moments here, of Ringo's eye for violence.
Seconds. Yeah, you're talking about seconds.
And it's a simple enough story template that could have revealed, but doesn't, engage in character drama. And Ringo can't claw himself back into that mode. You know, Tom, that he can excel at character drama and violence and action. And it's not, I don't think it's because of any China co-production aspect, because this is a Hong Kong set film mostly, so it doesn't feel restricted or constricted. And he's not too old to do this stuff either. I think his style can still work, and his chaos on the streets of Hong Kong can still work. This one simply doesn't come to life, despite the assets being there. In concept, there's nothing wrong with Wild City. It seems like a proper Ringo Lam movie to return with, but unfortunately, it's quite a disappointment.
Mate, I agree. Very similar feelings. My criticism for both of these films tonight we're covering is very similar, and it's they don't feel like Ringo Lam films, and I think they just suffer from a lack of his usual energy and ferocity. Like, it really is rare for me to kind of want to just get bored in a Ringo Lam film. There's always something going on, whether it is, you know, like a character's, you know, intentions coming to fruition, or, you know, a character's kind of making moves behind the scene and stuff. There's something going on, like, you know, script-wise, you know, and these kind of breakouts of violence. And with this, there just wasn't anything to get my teeth into. The characters weren't fleshed out. You know, the action wasn't fleshed out. Everything was just very surface level. And for me, a bit too polished and a bit too shallow you know, for a Ringo Lam film.
Which is very fair, which is very fair, and I agree. But I was glad it was set in Hong Kong, because I didn't know, but you sometimes sort of expect that the Hong Kong movie is not going to come before you, because it's a mainland Chinese production. And the only cue that I could see in terms of where the mainland China investors might have had a say was the fact that the gang that Michael Tse hires, that they are Taiwanese, right? Rather than Chinese.
Yeah, which is kind of a classic, it's like a classic Hong Kong cinema trope, isn't it? You know, the gang from China, the gang from the mainland come over, rob a bank, you know.
And it's normally not Taiwanese. It's actually not often at all, which is fine, because this is not a movie that panders, in my opinion. It's just that, well, they told us we couldn't do that, so we might as well change it to the Mandarin-speaking gang coming from Taiwan instead. And Jack Cao is from Taiwan anyway, the leader, so it's all fine.
Makes sense.
So I'm glad it was set in Ringo City, if you will, and he's trying to give us that energy where Louis Koo observes the poor and the rich and the rascals. And it gives us those sort of snaps of the backstory with Louis Koo, why he considers himself a bad cop and now he's a bar owner.
It's not fleshed out enough at all. Like, it's just not.
That verdict comes, that it isn't fleshed out. But he's trying to build, even if it seems like basic character building. But it never gets there. And I have some notes on why it never gets there. Unfortunately, as much as I like Louis, it actually comes down to the fact that Louis is not very compelling in this role.
I think it's the material to me. I think he's trying his best. I think the one actor who isn't really trying, Simon Yam, I love you, dude, but man, this was like sleepwalking. At one point, I think he had his sunglasses were on. I think he was actually asleep in the office. It was indoors, it was light. I'm pretty sure he was actually asleep.
He's in three scenes total, maybe that's 3 minutes. Yeah. He's his past superior. So one of the few highlights is actually, which shows that Ringo is still not messing around, that opening stabbing attack by the Taiwanese gang is brutal enough for me to sort of, well, here's perhaps the promise. Build on that, please. I wasn't bored with the movie that early, but, he knows brutality, so now craft threads and build on that. And unfortunately, it's one of the few peaks of the movie, one of the few violent peaks of the movie. I don't know about you, Tom. It's just because I'm old and I've been at this for too long.
You've been around the block, ain't you, Kenny?
I'm not too sure I like Ringo Lam's brutality in slick HD. I don't know what it's about.
I agree.
It's not his fault. It's no one's fault. It's just that I've grown up on like sort of grimy looking as shot and grimy looking VHS as and laser discs of this stuff.
I don't think it's like a valid criticism. I think it's obviously an opinion, and this is how I feel. I feel exactly the same as you, but it's not a valid opinion for me to go, you know, these are how films look these days, and these are how films, you know, are filmed, and we can't really criticize that. But yeah, you know, School on Fire on Blu-ray, not really interested. Do you know what I mean? It's just the way that it's shot and the way it looks, as you say, VHS, you know, it just suits it. It suits the tone and the vibe. And again, yeah, Ringo's kind of violence in glorious kind of HD. It's just an odd mix. It's a very odd mix.
I'd buy School on Fire on Blu-ray. It's harder for the new movies that look so slick and pristine for it sometimes doesn't mix well with brutality. But again, it's my fault that. So it's no one else's fault but mine that I think that. And it's obviously your fault as well for thinking that.
It's my fault. Yeah, definitely my fault. This is all my fault. I put the idea into your head. I agree. I'm saying support Hong Kong cinema as well. Please go out and buy the Blu-ray. But it's much more suited, like films of that ilk, there's just something about them, you know, watching them on kind of VHS and with the burnt-in subs, it feels very natural.
Therefore, I'm not craving like even upgrades from DVD to Blu of certain movies. Like, I don't need City on Fire on Blu-ray. I'm very happy with it on DVD, you know what I mean? And even my old VHS.
Happy Ghost 4 on 4K, super, super, super ultra HD Blu-ray, yeah? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I gotta learn to crave that, I suppose. So as Ringo sets up those threads of Louis Koo Sean Yu, his mother, the lady with the bag, and the violent act that she accidentally performs on that person in the mainland. We see that in the flashbacks. Was there any like promise as he builds those threads? Could you sense anything personally during this first third of him building all of those relationships and the pending violence? Like, or was it early on that you felt that the vibe wasn't right for you?
I kind of from the get go, it was just a bit strange. I felt like it was, you know, I liked the kind of relationship between Lucy Koo and Sean Yu's characters and obviously the mom, and I think it was quite sweet and it was nice, and I felt there was something kind of going on. But as soon as the character of what's the girl's name in this?
Well, Tong Yun was the character.
Yeah, played by Tong Liya.
Yes.
As soon as she's introduced, it's just odd. Like, I feel like the motivations were just off, and their motivations were a bit off, and it just didn't quite. I wasn't really intrigued by the plot.
It's as simple as that, Tom, because you're actually correct. He tries to build on their connection in this predicament, and that they'll stand by her as this violence is pending and all of that, but it never feels engaging on that level.
No,
and
man, not really. A lot of these mainland actresses, like, for me, that coming out, you know, beautiful girl, but in terms of acting, just don't really feel it. Like, don't really feel any emotion there, or any kind of screen presence, or any kind of me buying into the character. It's just like a painting, I suppose. You know, great to look at, but there's just nothing that I can really dig my teeth into.
So that's the core of it all, and when you're not engaged in that, that's obviously a problem. I think also someone either forced those like flashes and undercranked imagery on Ringo, because it doesn't suit him to be Tony Scott. And I loved Tony Scott.
Literally had that note.
I loved when Tony Scott did like that tight editing and cranked imagery. He knew that well, but it doesn't suit everybody to do, you know, undercranked traffic and imagery, and it doesn't suit Ringo. Thankfully, there's only a few flashes of it, but it doesn't suit him.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't seem like comfortable sitting with kind of Ringo Lam's style of directing. You know, the quick cuts and the flashbacks and like the light flashes and the flashbacks of the previous scene in literally the scene after it. I found really bizarre, like such a strange choice for the action. It really loses momentum. You're kind of watching where the action's going, and they play the scene from like a second ago in flashback again. Like, you're trying to kind of poke some emotion. You're trying to go, okay, I'll look what's happened to these characters. Okay, I understand it. It's still a bit crap, but I understand it. But during the scene? Like, what?
There's some insecurity going on here in the editing, and that's for sure, whoever was ultimately responsible for that. The other few peaks in terms of highlights is the fact that they stage some action on the tight streets of Hong Kong. I don't care what anyone thinks. I think that's a wonderful setting for action. Ringo has used the tight streets of Hong Kong very well. And the chase sequence that also involves Sean Yu's tow truck is decent enough. I like the beat where he has the actual cable down and it's scraping the asphalt, so there's sparks and stuff. So obviously it's very unconventional vehicle to even engage with in a chase and all of that. So there is that brief spark, literally, that Ringo, like he shows his eye for this. It's gonna come out better in the action department, but we'll get to that in the movie that followed Wild City. I think the tight settings and action within them works a little bit better in Sky on Fire. We'll get to that. So it's basically set up, you know, you got chases, the story, the violent beats, you gotta get compelling weight based on that. Unfortunately, it shows up pretty early that there is no real compelling weight as the chase is on. And it would have been okay, Tom, if Ringo and Action Team had kept a consistent quality to the action scenes. But okay, unfortunately, yeah, it's the start, slightly good in the middle, and slightly good at the end.
You're being very generous, Ken. It's like you're struggling to be generous. Slightly, kind of, little bit.
Well, it's good. Fair.
Yeah, no, it is, man. It is. There's definitely some good ideas there. And, you know, there's some good, like, scenes, like some kind of hand-to-hand combat with knives and, you know, tight corridors and tight locations. You know, as you say, like the streets of Hong Kong. But it just doesn't seem very, like, hasn't really got that kind of same visceral kind of energy that normally Ringo brings to it. And I don't know whether that's because of the editing again. I honestly don't know. The editing just brings it down for me. One of the editors on this was David Richardson, who was a long-time Johnny Toe editor, you know, full-time killer, Throwdown, Breaking News. And he's even recently done, you know, Motorway and Drug War and Blind Detective, which were all, you know, very well kind of, you know, edited, kind of your normal, you know, classic style of editing, nothing to do with flashlights and what would you call them, like camera.
Well, better movies, ultimately, most of it.
Yeah, I agree, but maybe this would have been slightly better if the editing wasn't so strange in that way. I don't know whether something's been forced on him or something he's going with. I don't know. But there was another editor who's only done one film so before this, so maybe it was Tong Wei Wing, you dude. He's the one that wanted the Northern Lights placed into this film.
We got a packed script writing team, and unfortunately the writing is way too on the nose at points, which is also a reason why I disconnected from Louis Q's predicament of that he felt he wasn't a bad cop, but he wants to be a good citizen. There's a scene which sort of made me sad and cringe, is when he meets Simon Yam in the police station after they are arrested after the chase, and he sort of immediately says, "I can be a good citizen, but I wasn't a good cop. Not even an hello, hello." Right? He just sort of says the theme of the character out loud to Simon Yam, and I thought this is a strange, inexperienced touches from a veteran to be this on the nose, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree, man. It's very like, yeah, as you say, it doesn't have that kind of usual dab hand of Ringo's. But I felt like with both these films, and again, like about the whole state of Hong Kong cinema with the kind of mainland co-production element in general, is that there's always plot points that are brought up and back histories and kind of interesting questions, intriguing questions that are brought up, but they're never, ever touched upon again. Like, they're kind of brought up for a little bit. It's like there's always some weird things going on in the background that you're kind of supposed to know about. It feels, do you know what it feels like sometimes? It feels like 20 TV episodes or 23 TV episodes, like a full season, edited into like 2 hours, and you lose details, and you're kind of already supposed to know the characters, and you're supposed to know situations. And I don't know what it is. I always, it's a very odd feeling, but I always feel like that watching newer Hong Kong films. There's always these details just flying about, and you kind of, it's like I'm supposed to know these characters already and what they're going to do.
Ultimately, I don't think any writing in concept is, because Ringo has excelled at depicting sort of inner emotional turmoil in either Cops or Undercover Cops,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, the story itself is fine. Like, it's a basic story, absolutely fine. Completely kind of workable in terms of you could add little elements and make it interesting. But just the actual, yeah, like some of the details and stuff. And like, as you say, yeah, the script and choosing characters to kind of, or characters choosing to say, you know, certain lines in weird places. It's, yeah, very strange. The selfie was good, though. I like the selfie. That was good.
Spoiler, just a selfie.
That's his way.
I wasn't really buying Sean Yu's sort of ex-con, you know, disrespect for the cops as he sits there being interrogated. I was more like, bring some realism into the picture and have him act like a normal person would in the interrogation room, because he doesn't need to have that attitude that's sort of like, well, I don't know what's going on here. Well, I was just there. Even if you don't want to give them any deets, then but don't be the sort of goofy triad follower. That he's a step removed from the followers that Sam Lee has. You know what I mean? Those goofy looking followers.
Yeah.
And I think Sean's character should have been a little bit better in that regard, because he's left that life behind. So that attitude is just really immature to have. And therefore, when you don't connect to that, you don't really connect to Lewis. All the tense beats in the pursuit that is supposed to be there throughout the chase scenarios, that unfortunately left me also a bit cold when all of this predicament isn't compelling, and it also isn't spiced up with shocking brutality or anything. It tries, but it isn't lingering as much as a Ringo Lam movie sometimes does, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't stay with you, like, you know, image-wise or emotion-wise or... Yeah, there's nothing really that kind of, like, you know, penetrates through and kind of sticks with you. But yeah, you're saying with that, it's an interesting backstory they got. And obviously, Sean Yu, like, impossible Lucio's character, Quartian Man, probably taking the rap for his brother and kind of getting him off the hook and lose his job. It's like a flashback and that's it. And there's nothing really spoke about it, or there's no real resolution to it. And again, it's just these details going to hit you, and they're never really...
A bit too non-verbal.
Possibly, yeah. It could have been a bit more kind of explained a bit
for
more
sure.
Properly.
And he doesn't need to be Mr. Exposition while doing that. Yeah,
no.
You can add a line or two and get clarity that way. So even though the brothers are at odds, one is lawful, one is willing to not be lawful, as you know, to get away with the money and help the girl and all of that. That I could have accepted the movie if the escalation would have been a lot more Ringo Lam grim. Even though he tries, there's not enough punch in the various chase sequences. At one point, someone gets it sliced up, if you will.
Yeah, there's a lot of stabbings in this film. Like, there's a lot of, for all you knife fans out there.
and sometimes innocence gets in the way. I think that's effective, but it never stays with you more than those few seconds. Maybe the only sequence that really stayed with me as a whole sequence is actually the toilet beating of Sam Lee's character.
That did hit pretty hard, that did, yeah. And I liked Sam Lee in the film as well. He's just given some kind of not particularly great character and not a lot of great character stuff, especially his confrontation in the bar with Lewis Kuhn. I thought was really bad, like kind of laughably bad, like it's like terrible, like really underwritten.
Standard head of triads, but I did like to see Sam there, and he's still a reliable performer whenever he does appear. So
definitely. But go back to the bathroom stuff. Yeah, that was one of the scenes where I did kind of wake up for a little bit and go, oh, that's pretty good. Because you just don't want your face next to all that poo on the floor, dear. Really, not very nice.
It gets
like,
the
it was
point
a bit cringy,
across.
Wasn't it? Yeah, it was kind of cringy. But that was, I'd rather, I'd feel, want to feel something. It was good to actually feel something watching this film, even if it was. I hope he doesn't, get his face in that poo.
Yeah, it shows also that the brothers were capable of violence, and they're growing closer through the predicament. And unfortunately, that is through violence too. That is what Ringo wants to convey, but it's rare. And but by the time we get to a 20-minute left mark, there is some grim escalation that you can engage in terms of the set piece of violence and action. But it's merely like, oh, That was pretty decent. Okay, it's over now. Oop, that too.
Yeah.
But it's over now. And it never got to that circle of engaging, at least basically, with characters and the violence and crafting an easily disposable Ringo Lam movie with some bite. That didn't happen. I don't require him to be 1987's Ringo Lam, but he's clearly trying to make something that, cuts to the core a little bit in terms of action and violence, and it's way too mild for that. Conceptually, more than okay, but doesn't hit many points correctly, actually.
Yeah, I agree. It's almost like there's a good base there. There's a solid story. It should be a good return to form for Ringo. It's set in Hong Kong. You've got some reliable Hong Kong actors, some good script moments that allow for some good action, but it's just like, as you say, it's almost like kind of, I'd say amateur, but it's almost like there's an uncertainty with the direction and there's uncertainty with the script, and it just doesn't, quite gel together for kind of, it doesn't quite add decorations to that Christmas tree. The tree's there, it might be bare, but it's solid, it's there, it's okay. Bang a few, baubles on, a few chocolates. The chocolates that you eat all on Christmas Eve when your mom says not to eat all the chocolates. But that's it. I'm going into a different area there. But like that, man, it's there. It's solid. You can decorate it. You can add a little flair. But there's just that flair is just not there, man.
Do you remember, by the way, what movie of Ringo's was his Christmas movie?
Oh, City on Fire.
Yeah, good man. Good man.
Did you not have a sound effect? I had to add one then. You normally got a sound effect for me. Do you still have your drum machine?
I mean, I can look it up, but I'm not going to look it up now. Oh. That you require it. So he's trying also, to provide some basic statements on and morals, if you will. He talks about the poor and the rich, and when opportunity presents itself, what do you do? And that's, by the end especially, it was kind of painful action movie stuff, poignancy that he tried to communicate as characters go out and the credits roll, that it was quite far from being acceptable, that surface stuff. I can accept surface stuff sometimes, Tom, if it's a genre picture or whatever, but it really felt forced to have a voiceover talking about the theme of the movie and all of that.
Yeah, like that end sequence, some of the imagery that's kind of smushed into that end action sequence is really on the nose, and it doesn't feel like Ringo, man. And I know Ringo's always had, you know, social commentary and always been really good at it, and kind of interesting kind of themes and characters, but here it's just, again, it doesn't feel like Ringo. The way, kind of how on the nose it is at the end, it's just, it's kind of like, it is kind of laughable. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. Like, and the thing is, if you told me this wasn't Ringo, you know, I maybe could have laughed it off as kind of a nice little entertaining popcorn-y hour and a half, but the fact that it was just, you know, this film, it's Ringo's first film in how many years, and nearly 10 years, it's like, it should be, it's a return to form, and it's not, like, it's really disappointing.
He can make his movie still. That's what I'm convinced of. It's not like that era has passed, but it needs to be good. It doesn't need to be full alert. It doesn't need to be set on fire. It simply needs to be good. And in 2015, 16, 17, 18, it can still be good because the elements are there. Especially if you can work in Hong Kong and work literally in Hong Kong, because I think that's a tapestry that you can tap into. But
yeah, it definitely helped this film for me as well, you know, being set in Hong Kong and kind of utilizing it. It just felt like a Lam film in that way.
Mm. And sync sound, Cantonese and Mandarin mix.
Yeah,
so it
yeah.
was very, the attention to detail was there, thankfully. I was happy to hear everyone's voices. You know, obviously Jack Cao and his Taiwanese gang members speaking Mandarin. And I think the lads spoke Cantonese and the girl spoke Mandarin, and no
yes.
one really batted an eyelid. And
No, which is not a big thing for me, really.
Well, I always like that. That is literally live, and they all understand each other rather than dub it all into Mandarin or dub it all into Cantonese, respectively. So, I'm going to put it to bed in terms of my notes and all of that. So, anything else you want to say about
Wild
City?
Well, I'm not putting out tonight to it. No, am I putting out to Wild City ever. It can go to bed on its own. I'm going to stay up and watch a film, and then I'll go into bed afterwards and be really passive aggressive the next day.
to your co-workers who know nothing of Ringo.
No, nothing of it. Yeah, and the thing is, you know, this is the last, not last in the trilogy, but he's kind of put it, I think he describes Wild City as, you know, in a city trilogy along with the film City on Fire and Full Alert in terms of
themes, if anything else.
Themes, yeah, not really, you know, no characters or anything, but really just themes and kind of vibes and films that are set in Hong Kong, people who are lost in the city. But yeah, it can't sit with them at all, man, in terms of just quality and you know, sitting with two of, you know, his best films. It just can't do that. And yeah, man, this Joseph Chang dude as well, like, I mean, he's giving me real Jay Courtney vibes in that. He's a good looking kid. You know Jay Courtney, the dude?
Nope.
In like he played Carl Reese in Terminator Genesis, and he's
never made it that far in terms of the Terminator movies.
Well, no, he's a good looking lad, and you know, he's got some kind of physicality behind him, but just like nothing. It's almost like he's a blank slate. Like he's actually a cyborg. Like he's a robot. And I got the same vibe from Joe Chang, and whether it's just because he hasn't been given enough, you know, the right script yet or something, or whether he's still kind of growing into, you know, himself as an actor, and he'll kind of have some good performances just waiting around the corner. But just everything I've seen him, because he's in both these films tonight, he's in Wild City and Scarfire, and very similar roles, and just can't really get me kind of invested in him.
I thought you said a cunt, like, oh, harsh. He's a working guy, he's young, give him a break.
Can't drop a C-bomb this early, to be honest. That's not good. It's not a good vibe for the show.
He's one of the gang members, and he's the brother in Sky on Fire of The Sick Girl, for those of you who have seen those two movies. That's Joseph Chang for you. I've never seen him in any movie prior to these, and I can't say he left much of an impression in terms of, oh, I gotta explore that filmography now. Not really.
You're sitting there, like, you take 2 weeks off work just to watch every... Every Joseph Chang performance. Ken, honestly, I admire it, mate.
It's 27 of them, apparently.
That's you could do that, mate. The way that you smash your films, that could be 2 days for you.
I'm old. I need 3 days to watch one movie sometimes. So.
In parts. I mean, act one, act two, act three. I know what you're going for there. You're into Shakespeare. You like that kind of classic act structure. I'm down with it, man.
And as for availability of Wild City, it is available on VCD, DVD, and Blu-ray in Hong Kong. Yes, they're still doing VCDs. They know their market. It's also on Blu-ray in America.
Ken is their market.
I didn't buy it that way. It's also on Blu-ray in America from Wellgo. It's streaming on US Netflix, and you can buy it on iTunes as well in the US. And that's where I bought mine. I'm going digital, yo.
Hold the phone. Digital? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? You can tell me you got a calculator next. Madman, you're gonna put the abacus away, are you?
I would love to be able to use an abacus just because it seems like a cool skill to have, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not intelligent enough. No,
no, me neither. It's it seems more like a random game that they're like, yep, 500.
Yeah, you start playing like drafts on it. Like, is this what you're supposed to do? Are you black? Am I white? What's going on here?
But we have one more movie to cover really quickly, though, because it is a quick take. It is his last movie to date, and I thought for once we'd place the quick take of this episode last, because it is Ringo's last movie to date. We'll see if he has any more movies in the pipeline as the years go by here. But 2016 Sky on Fire, starring Into the Badlands, Daniel Wu, is the last Ringo Lam movie at the time of recording. And as for my quick opinion, we're not going to do much of a back and forth here because this is a very brief review section. And so again, all of a sudden, after an 8-year absence from directing a full movie by himself, all of a sudden we got two movies across 2 years. He cranked out two new action pictures. And judging by the action and violence in Sky on Fire, or off Sky on Fire, and especially versus Wild City, that is still welcome in today's modern filmmaking, because the action and violence, it was compelling in this one. You know, even again, gritty Ringo action in bright and shiny high definition, it feels strange, but it feels better because the quality is higher here. But it isn't strong on storytelling. I can't for the life of me break down the plot very well, because there are different groups trying to get hold of some life-saving stem cell research, and he doesn't get very far at all about plot beats that concerns greed or profit or whatever redemption stories he spreads out across the movie, such as Daniel Wu's chief security officer obviously has a bad history and he's got scars, man, and it becomes complex as hell to identify characters and groups and motivations, who they side with. But amazingly enough, Tom, it becomes sort of sufficient to attach to the basic action spectacle that Sky on Fire is, because the action and stunts to me is still pretty neat actually in this one. He's got a grip on the real and gritty and nihilistic. Granted, I think he punishes one character way too much than she deserves.
Yeah. She gets a battering, unfortunately. I know what you're about.
I'm not going to spoil that one. The car chases in cramped areas and innocence getting in the way, I thought that was compelling as hell, actually. And not a lot is obviously enhanced with computer graphics. There's a big scene in Wild City that is obviously needs to be enhanced with computer graphics. A big chase scene towards the end. So it probably doesn't earn its cruel deaths at points, but nonetheless, I think the action eye of Ringo and his action team, it was okay, but I couldn't follow the movie very clearly, though, in terms of plot, which should mean it's a failure. Somehow, I set up way more versus Wild City in terms of, I like this sequence rather than, I like that second.
I know what you mean, but I felt the complete reverse, yeah. I'm the opposite. I think while Wild City for me was kind of, you know, passable. I was bored, but it was kind of passable. You know, Flyers on Fire is pretty terrible. Same vibe to Wild City, but, you know, very overcomplicated action melodrama. It hints at some interesting subjects, as I say, like, you know, as I was saying before, like these films kind of from this, you know, from this decade, from this countries rather, seems to kind of hint at some interesting stuff, and this it involves morality and life and death, and you know, there's some good stuff to be that could have been used or could have been further you know, pushed a bit to the audience, but it's just all over the place.
Yeah, it's hard to follow as hell.
It's just, what is it? As I say, like a full season, 5 seasons worth of melodrama, you know, a TV series put into like 2 hours. It's just, what's going on?
Imagine when that happened in anime, when they did like, because I know they did that with like the Macross series. It took like 40 episodes, made it into one movie. And I think to myself, how the hell is that ever going to play coherently?
If you thought Yuratsuki Doji was bad, like, you know, Macross is like, you know, 90 episodes into an hour and a half or something.
90 minutes of robots just bashing each other. But still, the action, like, was there anything stronger here?
For me, like, the CGI and GoPro combo, you know, action beats for me. You know, this thing now where they put the handheld cameras, like, kind of, you know, they are like, they're like GoPros. Stick it to kind of your places they can't put cameras. But for me, it's very distracting. Like, some shots, there's a, like, a sequence at the beginning with the trucks and there's a chase. They're just very inorganic. You feel like you're watching, like, a YouTube video all of a sudden. You feel like you're watching some guy's, you know, vlog, you know, climbing the Eiffel Tower, you know, his bare feet. I'm like, you know, what is this, man? It's incredible. It's a spectacle, but it's not cinematic. And for me, it just completely takes me out. And, you know, poor Daniel Wu as well. Like, he's a good actor, man. You know, and I know a lot of people, you know, shit on him for a certain Jackie Chan film, you know, where he turns into the Joker. But
that's half a good movie and then that happens.
Yeah, you know.
It's actually half an excellent movie and then that happens.
Yeah, man. He's, you know, he's a good kid. He's a good actor.
I don't blame Daniel for that, though. We talk about Shinjuku incident. It was not like Daniel said, oh, I got an idea, Mr. Director Derek E.
Yeah, I know, you know, say a good kid, but he just looks young, you know. He's like a lot of these Hong Kong actors, just looks great for his age. But he's been around. He's been doing it for a long time, since the 90s.
Those Gen X guys are now probably in their 40s, right?
They are.
Look smashing.
Better than me. But yeah, they, you know, he looks great. He's got acting chops. And he's just given this just terrible script to work from. Like, really bad lines and, you know, bad kind of emotional cues and, you know, just bad stuff, man. Really bad. And the worst sin that I think this film has is that it's confusing with the action beats. Is like, where are the characters? I remember watching like some of the sequences and there were certain characters, I just didn't know who they were. I was like, okay, are they with them or where are they come from? And that's the cardinal sin of action filmmaking, is you don't know where the characters are. There's no sense of space. Particularly in the end sequence, there was characters that came in that I weren't aware of. There's characters that were leaving that I was like, who are they? And I had to rewind it, and I was like, okay, yeah, they've came with Daniel Wu's character and like a team. I was like, who are they? Like, I don't know. None of them are fleshed out. Yeah, some dude's review on IMDb of this film is more like a Ringo Lame film, which I really enjoyed, and I stand behind that. I'm all for whoever did it. Sorry, man, I haven't got your name here. I should give you a shout out, but.
It was submitted by
Curly Boy 89.
Curly Boy, Brummy Curly Boy. Totally not me. This is Sam KW.
Yeah, which are you, Tim KW? Exactly. Which I stand by. It's just lame. Like, it's just, it really is lame. It just, I couldn't get by, you know, and I think. For this one, I really was bored to the point where I was like, I need to turn this off. Like, I can't. I need to watch this in part. I need to do a Kenny special and watch this in like 7 parts over a week, because I'm not gonna, you know, I'm just not gonna kind of sit through it and enjoy it in one whole piece. And I think it says it all, really, when I really struggle to kind of write notes, because it's just, there's just not a lot to say. It's
thankfully
just,
it was for the quick take, so you didn't need to do many notes for this one.
No, definitely, man, definitely. And it's just very generic and not really a lot to say about it.
Speaking of generic, it seems like Ringo is keen on having his trigger words in his titles. You know, Wild City. You know, Sky on Fire. So what are we going to have? What are we going to have next? Prison Contact. Wild School.
What school? I like that. You need
The Other Side of Fire.
The Side of Fire. Yeah, I like the kind of combinations that you're rocking there, man.
I'm declared fire.
Ice, I like that.
Seems like it's his trigger word, so you're sticking to that. So
looking for Mr. Ghost, Burning Cupid. That's
I like that too.
That's an SDI. That's an SDI, those.
Prison alert. That works too.
Prison alert. I like that. Undeclared aces. Let's move on.
Prison goes places.
Oh, we don't need. Okay, we don't need another one. Let's move on.
Right on. Well, we are done with the Ringo Lam series. And as I always say, if he makes another movie, I'm happy to resurrect the series, even if it's for a bonus episode or whatever. So, but as for right now, we are done with it. And I mean, the summary is always sort of similar for me when you think back on a director and the value of examining the highs and the lows from, you know, beginning to, so to say, end. So some directors have concluded their filmographies because they've been banished for decades by now, i.e. Nam Nai Choi, for instance. We know he's probably not coming back. To track growth in skill and the highs and the lows from beginning, mid-career or current career, and the change of tack in genre and approach to genre as you grow as a person, that's always fascinating. And in particular, since Ringo has vocally said that he's mellowed a bit and he seems very mentally aware, and he is set to, because he has a family that can move forward, and he can move forward as a person too. So I feel that's the nicest thing to hear now, even though he made Wild City. But it's still the nicest thing to hear that he feels complete as a person. And it just speaks volumes of the anger is not a natural part of him anymore.
That's age in him, man, I think,
to be
honest.
It is age, indeed. And, it's age, man. I mean, he's still welcome on the old movie block, if you will, because I think his eye is still valid. He just needs to find the ability to execute this much better. But and I'm sure he can still find the story pieces to put down in his next movie if he ever does one. No. So I'm not discouraged, because I can never be discouraged, Tom. He made City on Fire. He made School on Fire. Who can ever take that away from someone, you know?
No, definitely. And the thing is, it seems like, you know, a film for not for years and then two in the last couple of years. I think he might be on a run now, and I think he might have got that passion back, and he might be kind of...
Is it on the run or on a run?
But yeah.
God damn you, made Sky on Fire and ruined Daniel Wood's career. Get him.
Yeah, it might be, you know, it might be that. I mean, that poster looks like they're running from an angry mob that's got a file on, that has seen this film and they want to, yeah, persecute them all. But, you know, he seems like he's on a run, and he I think it's going to be more out, you know, in the future from him, I think. But I agree, man, you know, it's one of the things I would never want a director not to make films just because I don't want to see his new films, or just because I think they're not for me. It's great that he's, you know, he's out and he's got a vision, you know, and he's still making these films and they're still there. And hopefully, you know, it's good that there's maybe a younger generation. There's maybe people who are seeing his films and they love them. You know, they're not really aware of maybe his past filmography, and they've gone out to the cinema one day and seen Sky on Fire because it looked good to them. And they've seen it. And I think that's, you know, it's a beautiful thing, man, that he can still be making films and still, you know, having some kind of voice.
Yeah, because it didn't feel like an old man trying to recapture old glory and it being embarrassing. Yes, the movies were not quality movies, but I still think his intent and pursuit of theme and content is still valid to pursue. It's not like, come on, drop it already. It's no, I modern is fine if he pursues that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure he's gonna go back to Wuxia or anything. Because you can't make Burning Paradise today. I don't think anyone would take on his dark Wuxia, and it would look kind of odd in today's polished CGI Wuxia, I think. Burning Paradise is its very own 1994 thing. So.
That's a very good point, man. It's a very good point. And yeah, I think, you know, there's a vision there. There's still a voice there, and he might have mellowed out a bit. And I think your previous two films are probably not great examples of that. And I think these visions probably been a bit skewed by whether it be the production company or editors or script writers. I don't quite know what's gone on there. But, you know, there's still something there. He still wants to say something.
Hey, it started bad, so you never know when the peaks and valleys are going to come. You know
what
I mean?
That's very true.
Yeah. I mean, Esprit d'Amour is okay. And then some clunkers, and then Aces Go Places, and then off and running.
We had a good time with The Solid Gentleman. No, it was terrible. Well, you and me had a good time though.
We talked of it for a few minutes only, so that's the advantage of it all, I suppose.
I thought we had a great time. We had a really good time. All those two sentences about Alan Tam's jackets, we had a great time.
Plastic jacket fan.
Number one over.
He was a salesperson of some kind, maybe in a clothing store, whatever, Alan Tam. Still, I'm officially Team Tam, but not that damn
Dude,
movie.
That's so 1984, Alan Tam, okay. No one works in clothes shops anymore. All right. Jeez, robots, okay. Idiot.
So that's how you update the other side of Gentleman, by having robots. Probably would make it better.
Maybe. I don't know, honestly. I mean, I think that probably
Hello,
works very well.
I'm Alan Tam, your salesperson today. Do you like my plastic jacket? Error.
I think that probably the 80s-ness of that film kind of helps it a little bit for me to make it slightly passable. Or slightly passable or tolerable for me.
I don't know.
I know you had a bad time.
I know.
I did. Still haunted.
As I said, officially Team Tam, but I have the option to deselect the movies I don't like. And that's what I do with The Other Side of Gentleman. But I'm glad that Ringo, it's part of Ringo's journey.
Definitely. And what an amazing journey it's been. And, you know, as you said, as we always say, kind of every last episode, is, you know, it's been an amazing journey to go through. And it's always an interesting way to look at these films kind of as a body of work rather than kind of individually, because you can really get a taste of what's advanced and what's changed and what's got better and what's got worse and, you know, what kind of vibe the director's going for and kind of what vision he has is, you know, changes from film to film. And that's always interesting. And for me, it's always great going through these directors that, you know, I'm aware of their kind of their bigger or more well-known films. And it's great to kind of go in and see some of their smaller work directors that, you know, I really rate and I think are up there with the best of them, going in and seeing their, you know, smaller films that not a lot of people kind of shine a light on and talk about. That's always the big thing for me. It's always a great thing, and being able to speak about it as well.
It is indeed a fun process, and it's not a strain to go through it like this, especially when we pick directors that, you know, they have a suitable volume of movies. It's not like we're gonna do.
Can you imagine if we just went through all of?
I mean, it would be sort of fun, but man,
that would be fun, but tiring.
Yeah.
Three-man squad to do that. We couldn't do it as a duo, man, I don't think. We could just switch it. Like, we need like a substitute bench to do that.
You know, I wouldn't be opposed to it, but you need to be selective, because the interesting thing about Wong Jing, having recently watched for the first time the Stephen Chow movies he did, the Royal Tramp movies,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, as with many of Wong Jing's movies starring Stephen Chow, he did a fair few, 5 or 6, they feel very little like Wong Jing movies, and rather give the star his time to shine and let his movie show, because it's all Steven's sort of fast verbal delivery, and he plays this he cons himself into the palace, you know, and he fakes being a eunuch. And they never snip him. So he manages to con himself into the palace to be the right-hand man of the emperor and sort of wing, almost improvise himself through situations. And yeah, that's so very amusing, and it feels pure Stephen Chow all the way. So that's a notch on the belt of Wong Jing. Sometimes he stays out of the way.
Definitely, yeah. Because I think from the first film that he did with him to the last, you know, Stephen had like become a massive star. So I think it's probably makes sense for, you know, a massive star because of what he puts out there in terms of, you know, what he brings to cinema. So, let him be. By the time they're kind of doing Royal Tramp and Fight Back School.
Which was, that was Wong Jing by three.
Yeah. You know, he's letting him kind of do his thing, which is, you know, for the best.
Obscene amount of money those movies made, by the way.
Crazy amount of money. Yeah, crazy amount of money.
So, there he is. But we might do it. But,
we're talking like, what's the name? Season films here. Come on, Ken. Help me out, man. You know, Christmas season films, but not Christmas season films. New Year, Lunar New Year films. Sorry. Yeah, like, you know, that we're talking Lunar New Year's money. Yeah.
But at any rate, we are done for the director series, and we'll be back to, we've talked about researching the sort of shared output of director Mabel Chern.
You can reveal it. Oh my god, Ken, I didn't think you were gonna reveal it, Ken. Gee, sorry.
Well,
sorry,
it's the last episode, so we gotta give them something. So so we've talked about researching and doing a sort of shared director series between director Mabel Chern and Alex Law, because they are partners and filmmaking partners, and that will afford us the opportunity to check out dramatic summer Hong fare such as Eight Tales of Gold. We'll briefly recap Painted Faces. We'll definitely do Moon Warriors, because it's now documented that those two, Mabel and Alex, worked on narrative scenes on Moon Warriors. Yeah. Samuel didn't direct the entirety of it. And that's very like an open secret, and no one is ashamed of that at all. And yeah, then you can get us up to Echoes of the Rainbow with Simon Yan's first Hong Kong Film Award, despite Alex directing that. I think we're going to have like a shared directing series. And it also will mean, because we've had that request, that I've done a solo review of An Autumn's Tale, but I think I'm up for discussing it in full again with someone, i.e. you. So, and it's my favorite Hong Kong movie of all time.
Oh man, that's cool. I'd be honored to be here while we talk about it, man. Definitely, with such a, you know, with such praise to its name from you. But you also did that awesome Jackie Chan documentary as well. Very heartfelt one about Traces of a Dragon.
Oh, was that the demo or one of them?
That was Mabel. Yeah, that was Mabel. Cool. Yeah, really interesting. So I'll be looking forward to revisiting
that. Should try and dig that up, hopefully available English friendly and all of that. So.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen it in the past with subs.
Well, we are done anyway for now with the director series on Ringo Lam, and for all your podcast on Fire Network needs, including the back catalogue of the director series on directors such as, to mention, Ringo Lam, Kirk Wong, David Chang, and Story of Ricky's Nam Nai Choi. You can find that back catalogue on podcastonfire.com. All the relevant show links, including social media links, are available in the show post or on the website, including also Tom's review archive on vcinemashow.com.
Very dusty review archive that needs some Mr. Sheen immediately, and a rag, a yellow rag. Really fast. Needs buffing, I think, to be honest. It's a shame that I'm just a working stiff and I just don't watch films anymore.
Well, you hit up John and Dr. Berra and have them clean up to you.
They need to. That's my my cleaning team. That sounds really, really bad. They're legends and they have great stuff on there, so check that out, and, you know, while you're waiting for my stuff, I'd say.
So, Ben Kennedy here with me was Tom KW once again, joining me to run through a filmography of a particular director. So it's been fun to have you for the entire run, and it's going to be fun doing another run or two. We might do Mabel Chung, Alex Law, and then Wong Jing afterwards, you know.
Buddy, yes! Can't wait, man. It's been a pleasure, as always, and I hope that everyone listening has had as much fun as I have, you know, sitting here recording with you, dude. And obviously, yeah, watching the films. Oh, but who cares about that? No one cares about emotions. Get out. I'll think of something really edgy to say instead. That'll probably
or
be good.
Or simply stop talking, perhaps.
Cinema is so last year. I'm into chalk paintings now, stapled together and flipped through, and that constitutes my cinema, because I'm hip.
Sweet, yeah. You do that.
Fuck everyone.
We out. Let's fade out and say bye, for heaven's sake. Be quiet.
Bye.
And say
would
bye.
I do. Ciao.